Thanks, Steve. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's Friday.
Just makes me smile hearing that.
The fact that it is Friday.
And that I hear this music.
Good news,
yes.
Yeah. It's a nice combination, isn't it? Welcome to the show. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. Call us. Text us 312-981-7200. Just quickly, Wendy. This won't take long. Just quickly. Thank you very much to everybody who came out to see us at Tree Time Christmas Creations in Lake Barrington yesterday. I like to believe a good time was had by all. That seemed to be the mood.
It was really fun. A lot of people came out more than ever this year.
Yes. Some from states as far away as Wisconsin.
And a woman wearing an Australia sweatshirt.
Yes, to lead us to believe that she came in from Australia, but after a line of questioning, we determined that she was lying.
It was very fun.
Yeah.
I'm really in the Christmas mood, and I start reminiscing about when the kids were little. That's when Christmas was fun for me, to try and get the top toy of the year wrap it up, because kids were so appreciative when they were little.
And then?
And now it's just like, no one can... We are fortunate to get what we want. Like, I don't know what I want. We all have what we need and what we want.
Right, yeah.
So Christmas is...
Oh, don't say it. Don't say it. It's still the most magical time of the year.
It's the joy that fills your heart, Wendy.
Come on.
It's not about the presents.
But thinking of when my kids were...
Nat King Cole hear you say this.
Just thinking about when my kids were little, I got that like really exciting feeling like, oh, I can't wait to go out and go shopping and get awesome-looking wrapping paper because I love wrapping, and now it's just like, what do you want?
Really? You don't get it at all anymore?
The day before, when
just
I
one day?
Start rapping, I love to put on my Phil Spector Christmas gift for you with the Ronettes and everything.
But I know that when you decorate the house, you always come in and you're excited about that.
Yeah.
So that's...
You clean the dining room table off.
Yeah.
Hey, I did that...
The annual clearing of the dining room table?
A month ago.
Did you?
You did.
Is it going to hold up by the holidays?
I have become very anal about the dining room table. If there is one piece of mail there, I freak out.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe I could get that way for the rest of the house.
Wow. Who are you?
I know what
you mean, though, Wendy, because now everything's on sale, so I buy everything I want for myself at Christmas time.
Honestly, that's what my husband does. And it's like, the kids are like, what does Dad need? I go, absolutely nothing.
He buys
whatever he needs.
Don't you guys put some sort of a limit or a hold on that where you go, look, because Christmas is just blank days away, so let's just not buy ourselves anything until the holiday. Nobody does that?
Do you think I can wait for something I want?
I guess not.
We try it every year, and then my husband always gets me something, and I don't.
So you guys make an agreement to not get each other
something. Right.
But,
and he never adheres to it.
Can I defend your husband? That's a trap. Because if Terry ever says to me, no, this year we really need to cut back, so let's not get each other a gift. If I then follow through and don't get her a gift, it's not going to play out well. You have to.
And Mary, how many years? You know he's going to come through, so I hope you get him something.
I do. I always do. Because
so why do you
always
say it?
He always trumps me. He always gets more. And it's just little stuff, you know? But it's just, it's annoying.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Right, this is what the holidays are.
He just likes to do that to me.
It's people upsetting each other.
But can I just say, I started this, and everyone's pushing back, saying, oh, come on, it's the Christmas spirit, and truth be told...
Mm-hmm.
It's not as fun as it used to be.
Well, but I will say this. Yesterday, when you guys started out with silver and gold or whatever,
yes.
I was like, oh, that sounded kind of nice.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. And you got the sprinkle in your eye.
And then she rubbed it out, didn't she?
Yeah, you had to. Yeah.
The twinkle or the sprinkle?
It was more of a sprinkle. You got
like
all teary-eyed. You got all like... Oh, it's
the waterworks.
It's the Christmas songs.
I don't like the obligatory gifts. That's the one thing I don't like.
You don't like getting them or giving them or both?
Well, no, I'll take them. But
yeah,
it's so hard to find the perfect gift these days.
But when you're supposed to give someone a gift, it's not as fun.
Don't you know though that that's a foul? Like the perfect gift doesn't exist, right? So Terry, for years and years and years, was the one who said, you know, I have to get him. When it's all said and done, it's just going to be a gift. There's no such thing as the perfect gift. Don't waste your whole holiday season looking for it because it doesn't exist.
Our family makes lists. My brother is most specific. We now do a family grab bag with them, but before it would be like Land's End, page 64, white shirt, size L.
See,
I mean,
specifics.
So, but that's not a Christmas gift.
I know.
He's shopping.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's boring. I like getting something more than a white shirt.
Don't you have, as somebody who, I do not participate in a Christmas grab bag, but don't you have veto ability where you just go, hey, Vito, I'm not getting you what you want on the list.
I'm half Italian, so there is a veto in our grab bag.
Veto, where you just say, I'm going to go off the list and I'm going to surprise you with
something. No one likes that. If someone goes through the effort of making a list, if you deviate from it, there's disappointment.
Yeah. I think the Bill and Wendy Show should have a grab bag this year.
Yes.
The three of you, you and Jasmine.
Oh, no, you'd be in too. Mary, you're in too. If we're doing it, you're doing it.
Oh, so now I got to do two? I got to do the morning show? And well, okay.
And let's say $300 limit.
What?
Okay, like total?
Ours is like 20.
No, let's go 300.
I don't want to do it.
Perfect. I got enough pressure. Okay. I'm sorry.
It's on.
Nor does Mary. I'm just honest enough to say it.
Okay, well, you know what, Wendy? You don't have
we
to
could
be.
Do a white elephant one.
No, you know, if Wendy doesn't want to do it, Bill and I will give her a gift anyway.
Yeah.
And don't you feel fine
because we
that.
Only care
I've
about
given
the giving.
You guys gifts every year.
You really
so.
Do. You're the one who does give
and
the gifts.
And now it's going to stop.
Let's just do some the worst gift possible you can get, like a white elephant thing.
I always thought it'd be funny in a grab bag situation, and maybe it's because of my love of bookstores, and Steve, I know you have the same love, where you have to get the person on, whoever you pick as your Secret Santa, you have to find the most inappropriate book for that person and give it to them for the holidays.
That's funny.
You have to go to the bookstore and just find the book that they would care the least about, and that's what you get them.
But presents have turned into a problem because sometimes there are people in my family that find something that I would like, but maybe it's not my size, mm-hmm. but they'll still get it, so there's something to wrap up.
Right.
That's wrong.
Right.
So then you buy something that's too big for you?
Well, no, sometimes, and I can't name names, but sometimes it's like, you know, oh, this is so cute. Mm-hmm. And then they honestly, as I'm opening it, say, well, they didn't have your size, but I figured you could exchange it.
Oh.
Like, I don't know, call
Where's
another
the effort
store.
On that? You got to put more effort out than that.
That's a little weird.
Come on.
No, that doesn't count.
I know.
Don't name names, but.
No, I'm not naming
names. Is it Jimmy? Is it your husband?
No.
No.
No, and he just gets so caught up with what do I get you? Because really, and we are fortunate enough, first of all, I don't really require that many things, but mm-hmm. if I need something, I'll go
You're
buy
on
it.
On Amazon.
By the way, since we're talking about this, can I just say on the Biz Lunch today?
Yes.
The CEO of the Hallmark Channel.
Oh, perfect timing, Steve.
The movies start a week from tomorrow.
Perfect timing.
So we're going to talk about those Christmas movies.
I don't
know.
Well,
do we
you
know who won't be in them, Aunt Becky.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
There's going to be a huge voice.
Christmas from jail. Isn't that going to be
this the first year they're going to run Christmas from jail?
Well, I'll write that question down.
Yeah,
you.
Ask that, Steve. Yeah. That'll go over good. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. We're 312-981-7200. Call us. Text us. It's fun. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, real quick, a text. We were talking about the holidays and gift giving. Somebody at 630 says, here's my gift giving. Something you want, something you need, something you wear, something you read. And it's been working great. That's from Dr. Seuss. Send that in. That seems very practical. Somebody else said, I'm with you, Wendy. Kids don't seem to care anymore. Technology has ruined it. Kids today are spoiled.
We're all spoiled. Let's be honest.
There's still some magic in a kid at holiday time. You know, with what's going on with, you know, with Santa Claus and with all the decorations and stuff. And yeah, there's technology does play a big part in it, but there's still enthusiasm and excitement as the holidays draw nearer, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah?
But again, it's just waiting for things.
Sure. Sure.
And there's nothing I want. Like, if you ask me to come up with a list right now, that's more problematic for me than anything.
Right.
On Thanksgiving, that's when we exchange all our lists, and I can never think of anything.
Yeah.
Could you think of 10 things right now you'd want?
For me, no. No. But it's not, I don't, I...
It's not about
I'm
me,
not,
it's about the children.
It's for the children, Wendy.
I had a lot of good feelings when I was honking at the teacher striking today on my way in.
Everywhere, right? Did you see them at every school I passed had a bunch of striking teachers out front?
And just some of the things, I hope this can come to a conclusion, and I just was shocked that there are no nurses at these schools.
Yeah.
And the other one was a social worker, librarian. I feel like, I don't know.
You don't think they need librarians anymore?
They should have one, but I mean, the nurse for sure.
Oh, definitely.
And social workers, in this day and age, it's so much more difficult for kids in school. The fear of school shootings, a lot of anxiety and depression on the rise. I just, I find it shocking that
scurvy.
They haven't had...
That's a big problem in the schools right now. You got to have a nurse to take care of the scurvy.
You know, you can think believe this as an excuse or not, but the mayor says that there aren't that many available.
Oh, there has to be.
Well, she said it even this morning, that when you looked at Illinois schools graduating nurses, there were fewer than 100 statewide last year.
Can that be possible?
I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously there are other nursing programs around the country, but
right.
And Janice Jackson was on with John Williams, you know, and they have to be more than just nurses. I think they I don't remember exactly what the degrees were, but there's a pretty high standard for them. So the city argues, you know, like we'd like to do it too.
Right.
But their
availability is a problem.
In fact, Lightfoot said this morning, we would like the union to work with us, but we're working now and trying to increase the pipeline of mm-hmm. these people, working with other universities to create more nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I might be remembering this incorrectly, but I think the elementary school nurses my kids have, I didn't even know if they were nurses at the time.
What did you think they were?
I mean, sometimes there was a shortage even where we live, and so like a mom would cover obviously
some medical background or not medical background.
I don't really know, and that's why I really shouldn't even be saying this, but I just know that just to have someone for
just because they were like a nurse at Halloween and had the outfit.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah. But I mean, it's not like an EMT's at school, so you know, if there's even just someone you can go to get a Band-Aid or you have a blister or a bloody nose.
Well, so that speaks to your understanding of it, and it's not the reality of it. They have to have someone more qualified than that, according to the mayor, according to the law, and that's why they're having a hard time finding them.
My grade school didn't have a school nurse when I was in first and second and third grade, but either in fourth or fifth, they had one full time. And my high school had two or three at all times. There was always a lot of nurses around.
I don't think I ever had a nurse.
You didn't?
No. No, I can't think of one.
No. And what about, you don't think librarians, Wendy, should
still
be?
Well, no, I'm not saying that's not important, but I mean, you know, if you're going for priority, I think a nurse and a social worker... And even just one social worker is probably not enough.
Right. Right.
I mean...
But who would... Not that I'm the biggest advocate for librarians, but I'm just curious. If you do have a library in your school, somebody's got to be there to maintain it and do all the work, right?
And again, you know, I this one I'm not as certain about, but you can't just... I mean, I can handle that. I'll go shelve the books and keep track of them, but I think you have to have certain degrees in order to qualify to work in
schools.
Steve,
you have a keen understanding of the Dewey Decimal System that most people don't have.
Yeah, I'd forgotten it existed until I tried to find a nonfiction book recently.
I'm thinking back of the poor nurse at my elementary school. My family lied to me about everything, and I had a pet rabbit named Nosy, and I'm just thinking about this. I had a cold or something, and my family told me, oh, you must have tularemia, which is rabbit fever.
Sure.
So, of course, I retained that knowledge, and when I went down to the nurse to say I wasn't feeling well and I think I have a fever, I also explained to her that I had tularemia, and of course, she called my house and said, is this true? I mean, is there an epidemic? And they laughed. You know, I was in third grade and went to fourth grade reading because I used to be smart.
Yeah.
And I remember my sister was in high school at the time and took Spanish. And she just would throw these things out at me matter-of-factly. Like, do you know, in Spanish, you say the word chihuahua, chihuahua. Mm-hmm. So I raised my hand in fourth grade reading, being a third grader, and shared that with the class. And poor Mrs. Maxwell's like... That's interesting, Wendy. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't true.
No. Well, that's one of the symptoms of tularemia, Wendy. So.
You know, that's so mean of people to play on your gullibility.
Why
like
would they
that?
Do that that's to just, you? They must not have loved you.
It never ends.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think they
that's
loved you.
That's why I believe actually, I shouldn't believe everyone, but I do. let's find out very quickly from Gigi about the nurse shortage. Hi, Gigi. How's it going?
Hi, Wendy. It's going okay. I am a nurse, yes, and I just wanted to comment on the school nurse situation. That is a special program, and they do need certification, and there's a limited number of programs in Illinois for that area. I am aware, I just came out of a meeting and learned that Lewis University has some kind of a contract or affiliation with CPS to provide certified school nurses to them. However, you can only take so many nurses in a year and graduate so many a year. So it's probably going to be a while before the pipeline can be filled. So I do believe that there aren't enough nurses out there, that there aren't enough nurses for many positions in the city.
Well, what a tough job being a nurse is.
Oh, yeah.
And, wow. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. I just feel like there should be a nurse. I didn't know there was such a shortage.
First of all, in private schools, there's not nurses all the time either. My kids went to private school, and they were in school, and the school secretary was giving out the medication. But in public schools, I know some schools share a nurse. I mean, there's possibilities or some kind of things that can be worked out, possibly. But, you know, I do believe there's not enough to go around, and I believe the mayor's corrected that.
Thank you for your comments.
Thanks,
Gigi. We appreciate it. I don't have the answers. I just hope there's some agreement that happens
soon. Very soon, we hope. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a big show ahead. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. Yes, Wendy.
I was just going to say we should have had Terry Hemmerd in for Middays with the Beatles.
No, you're absolutely right, Wendy. So true. Hard to believe, but it was 50 years ago that this song and the album Abbey Road came out. Gary Winstrup is here, a music historian, talk about that incredible event. Hello, Gary.
Hi.
Great to meet you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Hard to believe, right? 50 years? That seems impossible.
I know, and thank goodness people are still interested in buying it and listening to it and talking about it. How? That's awesome.
Well, I'm sure you'll agree that album is as relevant today as it was 50 years ago. It's still, when people hear it, you still, like, just now as the first few chords are playing, your heart beats a little faster.
I heard that too. It was calming in my case.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's the music is just sort of part of our DNA, and it still speaks to us. And Wendy was mentioning her kids, who are teenagers, like the Beatles. And how wonderful is that? That it's multi-generational.
And that's what it is when a lot of teenage people, and even younger, their parents listen to the Beatles. How can you not like them?
Yeah.
You know, there's some quiet, there's some raucous, there's some psychedelic. It really encompasses every kind of musical style.
I agree. I met a gal recently, our age, and she was saying she hated the Beatles.
Hated them.
What? How could that be? And she didn't have a good reason. I think she's just being a contrarian.
Yeah.
Did she also hate pizza and water?
Yeah, we don't want to hang out.
No, that's no good.
You get this, like, Rolling Stones or Beatles things, and for a while I was thinking the Beatles were kind of overrated and the Rolling Stones were more experimental. But when it was pointed out to me the short amount of time that the Beatles did what they did, I have to eat my words.
I'm pleased to hear it. Actually, I'm developing a lecture. We mentioned that I lectured libraries, Beatles versus the Rolling Stones. I think that would be fun. And I was thinking you sort of set it up on, like, different points of reference, like longevity or sales or leader boundary breaking, you know, who would win where.
Yeah.
Certainly the Rolling Stones, hands down for longevity.
Yes.
But almost on any other scale, I think the Beatles are winners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back 50 years for a second.
Yeah.
All right. So in October, Abbey Road comes out.
Right.
The Beatles were already having a fairly decent year because earlier in the same exact year, Yellow Submarine had come out.
Right.
And yet, those two albums have such different personalities. That's not by accident. That's on purpose, right?
That's the Beatles. They change. They never wanted to repeat themselves. They're going down a particular path with a particular sound. And they're like, okay, we did that. We're tired of that. Let's go in a different direction. I mean, just to go from Sgt. Pepper to the White Album is, you know, that's a dramatic
what a 180.
Change. Yeah. A 180 indeed.
Have you walked down Abbey Road, either of you, and taken the picture?
I have not. Have you, Gary?
I have not.
Because I see every... No,
yeah,
I've never been
there.
Yeah,
it's fun when you see somebody doing it.
And I love it. I love to see that on Facebook.
Yeah.
Everybody does it. I'm sure it's very crowded with people trying to take pictures without having strangers in it.
And your shoes on.
Yeah, right.
Right, so we'll talk about that. Before I do that, I was researching my lecture on Abbey Road, and I didn't know this existed. You guys may know it. There's some things called Earth Cams. So they're cameras positioned all over the world. I Googled it. I can't figure out how many.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is trained on the Abbey Road crossing. So anytime, day or night, 24/7, you can go online and see what's going on at the Abbey Road crossing.
Oh, that's excellent.
And anyone who has been there will tell you it's a busy street.
Sure.
And there's no stop sign. There's no traffic light. So you've got cars whizzing.
Dangerous. You know,
dangerous while everyone's trying to do their Abbey Road picture.
But isn't it, wouldn't you agree, it's probably the most famous crosswalk in the world because of that album cover.
I would agree.
Right? It has to be.
I can't think of a competitor. That works for me.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the personality and how different it was from what they had just done.
Sure.
For a lot of bands, when you establish a certain sound, you don't want to vary from it too much because your fan base gets upset. The Beatles didn't seem to care about that. They just succeeded.
They succeeded. To your point, a lot of bands, they come up with a sound that the fans like, and they keep pushing that sound. And the Beatles went where they wanted to go, and it was up to us to follow. So they, changed the paradigm. Yeah. We had to follow them. You know, they weren't going to follow us.
I'm laughing because every time you see footage of the Beatles concerts, Bill, you always ask this question, why girls would just scream because they're not hearing the music. It's like, what would cause somebody to do it? And it makes me laugh
it's
every
funny.
Time.
They just scream.
So why do you think? I have a theory. Well, it's not a theory. I did some research on it. Do you guys have a theory on that?
Ringo scared them?
No, they're just so overwhelmed. They're just... That's my theory. That's the only thing I've got.
Yeah, and I think that's it. A lot of it was... it's a safe release for girls. It's something that girls do together.
Yeah.
And they can... You may not appreciate
no,
this.
No, no.
But they also... It's a safe sexual expression.
Really?
You know, they're preteens. Maybe they're in that world a little bit and
they need a release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For I can think of better ways, but
yep. You'd get kicked out of Shea Stadium for that one. I know that for a fact. But it's so funny to see. It's like an impulse that all the girls just collectively have. Yeah. They see the Beatles. They don't even hear the Beatles. They just hear screaming.
Right.
And they scream.
Indeed. I don't know.
It
frustrated the Beatles. You know, one of the reasons they quit touring is everybody's screaming. No one's paying attention to the music. So the Beatles aren't really working hard to be great musicians anymore.
Yeah.
And
they
figure,
they're just going to scream. Yeah, why bother indeed? Yeah, it wasn't rewarding for them anymore.
How much of the magic of this particular album of Abbey Road is the Beatles, and how much of it is George Martin, or is it fairly even?
That's a great question. You know, George Martin, to his credit, he always sort of steps back and lets the Beatles be the star. He never takes much credit. What makes Abbey Road particularly interesting to Beatle freaks who know this stuff, it's the first Beatles album recorded and mixed in stereo. All the other albums were in mono, mm-hmm. and they looked at stereo, and then they kind of moved on. And they also had upgraded the Abbey Road studios, which, by the way, the studios are named after the album, not vice versa. Anyway, they had updated the studios so it had better technology. So Abbey Road, to my ears, is the richest, lushest, fullest sounding Beatles album. And that's to George Martin's credit. But without incredible songs, who cares how... you know, nice the sound is.
Were they writing to the idea that it would be heard in stereo, so maybe doing the orchestration just a little differently or not?
I don't think so.
No?
No, I don't think so. This was the only album that they focused on stereo. They may have played a little bit with bringing things on the right side and then moving it to the left, so maybe a little bit, I don't think so, no.
Gary Wenstrup is with us. He's a music historian. I am so terribly sorry I missed your lecture at the LaGrange Library. I live in LaGrange, but you have some other appearances coming up.
I do. I don't remember them off the top of my head.
I'll help you out. November 4th, the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road, the Beatles at the library in Crete.
Okay.
November 5th, the Beatles, their history in 1 hour, Forest View Library. That's close. Maybe I'll go to that. Okay. And then you're doing Motown Music That Moved the World at the Naperville Library on November 7th. You are a music historian, and I understand you have brought... some Beatles trivia questions. Can we take a break? And then Bill's going to beat me.
I don't know. You know this stuff pretty well, too. So between the two of us, we should do well, Gary. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Start doing a little research during this break.
All right. We'll study up. Gary Wenstrup is here. We're talking Beatles. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to chime in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
This might be the best song
ever.
I'm sorry.
This is great.
I'll say that about each and every song.
Gary Wenstrup is here. He's a music historian. He's here because the Beatles' Abbey Road album is celebrating its 50th anniversary. And it just recently, right? October the 1st?
October the 1st was the release date in the United States. If you were in England, it was September 26th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for the perfectionists.
And these are the times, it's hard to imagine this now, but when the top 10 was posted every week, the Beatles always had two or three or four songs in the top 10.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible. Everybody loved them.
And all the songs were 1 minute and 3 seconds long.
So true. When they packed it all in
always,
2 minutes. They got
always.
The hooks in.
When the album came out, it was an immediate hit, both critically and by the audience, right?
Oddly enough, not critically as much. The New York Times called it, quote, an unmitigated disaster.
Oh.
And I've read the review, and frankly, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I think his point was it wasn't socially relevant. It didn't address the Vietnam War. It didn't address civil rights, which is maybe why it feels timeless now.
Yeah.
But I think he felt the Beatles had an opportunity to share an agenda, and they didn't do it. Rolling Stone magazine called it flawed but fine. Gee, thanks.
Fine.
Yeah.
Do you think they'd go back and amend those reviews a little bit today?
Absolutely.
They would, yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, it's the Beatles' best-selling album of all
it
their
is.
Albums. It's their best-selling.
Yeah. You have some quiz questions that you'd like to run past Wendy and me.
I do. We're going to see just how deep your Beatle knowledge goes. And they're multiple choice, except for the first one.
Okay.
All right, so here we go. What is the order on the cover of them walking across the street?
I don't know. And I could cheat right now because it's on my screen. I'm not looking.
That's on us.
Is it John, Paul, George, Ringo?
No, that's a good guess. No, it's...
It is, I'm just going to guess, Ringo, John, Paul, George.
Is it Bingo, Flegel, Drupal, Snark?
This quiz may not go so well.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
It's John, Ringo, Paul, and George.
I knew Paul was the second one, I guess, as they're walking.
Okay. A side question before you get to the next question, unless one of your quiz questions is about this. But the idea of Paul not wearing his shoes, which we alluded to earlier, led people to believe, naturally, that he must be dead. You wouldn't put a guy on the cover of an album without shoes on if he hadn't passed away. Please explain.
Crazy. And it's one of those things that comes up in the lecture. People love this whole Paul is dead thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why that phenomenon exists. It began in the Midwest, by the way. But anyway, Paul did have sandals on that day. It was a hot day in August when that cover photograph was taken. And he says he took off the sandals because he thought his feet would be cooler.
On hot pavement.
On hot asphalt.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He put the ass in asphalt with that reasoning.
All right. Should we move on?
Yes.
All right. So all the rest are multiple choice. All right. So speaking of the cover, how many pictures do you think the photographer took to get that iconic picture?
Mm-hmm.
So it's multiple choice.
All right.
1, 6, or 11?
All right. I'm guessing.
All right. Go ahead, Wendy.
I'm saying 1.
Okay.
I'm going to say 11.
And it's 6.
Oh, God, we stink.
Nice job, you guys.
Wow.
I think maybe I need to be a permanent guest here.
Yeah,
just
maybe.
To work with this.
I hope your next question is spell Beatles, because I can do that.
So anyway, that fascinates me. Only 6, clicks of the shutter.
Yeah.
You know, you picture photographers. They're taking, angles and the light and different lenses and all that sort of thing. So it was just 6 photographs. And the one that was chosen was the only one, and in my lectures I show all 6, the only one where they're all in step.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. Should we move on?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So
embarrassing.
Yesterday is the most recorded Beatles song of all time. Actually, it's the most recorded song of all time, but obviously the most recorded Beatles song of all time. What's number 2? Something, All You Need Is Love, or Here Comes the Sun?
I'm going to go with Something.
I'm going to say All You Need Is Love.
Wendy's leading.
Nicely done, Wendy. Congratulations.
Yeah. So it's interesting that George Harrison's composition is the second most recorded Beatles song. This is hard to track, but they have... historians have done the top 10 most recorded songs of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So, Over the Rainbow is in there, and summertime, you know, when the living is easy, that's
mm-hmm. a game mess.
But there's three Beatles songs, Yesterday, Something, and John Lennon's Imagine. So of all the music
ever,
yeah. three of the most recorded songs
it's impressive.
Are Beatles songs.
It is that's impressive. Very impressive.
It is impressive.
Do you have
Octopus's
one more?
Garden.
No, it's not.
It's not Octopus Garden. Okay,
it should be, Bill. I'm with you.
All right, we're on to number four. What song had a Shakespeare influence? Here Comes the Sun, Golden Slumbers, or The End?
Golden Slumbers.
I'm going to say the same.
It's The End. Mm-hmm. That's a hard one.
God, we are horrible.
Oh, come on. Don't beat yourself up. It's Friday.
I do know that. All right, I'll let you answer this question.
So Paul has said that he knew or learned that Shakespeare ends all of his plays with a couplet.
Mm-hmm.
So the couplet that ends the album, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
Yeah. Oh, there's your influence right there.
There's your couplet.
Now, the Beatles, is it true that they kind of took Buddy Holly, the Crickets, and wanted to do something like that, but spell it differently so it wasn't the bugs? It meant it was a double entendre with the beat, like musically.
When do you win that one?
Yeah.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, it, Crickets. John named them, he loved words that had dual meanings.
Yes.
So Crickets, it's an insect. It's also a sport in England. Beatles, also an insect, yeah. But you change the spelling to emphasize the beat of rock and roll.
Gary, we have exactly 4 seconds, so this is a great question. Yes or no, Yoko broke the Beatles up?
No.
Nope.
Absolutely
right. She did not.
And I'm sick of her getting blamed.
Did she break up other bands?
She didn't help matters, but no, it's not her
but
fault.
But it's not her fault. Yeah. Right,
it would have happened inevitably.
I will stop blaming Yoko.
Yeah. I think you have to let it go, Bill.
I'm going to let it go.
You
so nice to meet you.
Are amazing. We do need you up once, more often,
once
rather. I was going to say
yeah,
that.
Once a week.
His name is Gary Wenstrup, Wenstrup. You can go to GaryWenstrup.com. He is a music historian. He has other appearances coming up throughout the first week in November, and all your appearances are there.
Yeah.
On your website?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And Gary, the classes I teach as well are there.
I got to take a class.
Definitely.
We have to We have to learn.
Yeah. We'll do better next time, Gary, I promise. So nice to meet you, Gary.
Great. It
Thank you
great
coming up.
Here.
That's Gary Wenstrup.
And the news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Every Friday, we talk to Alexander Zalbin, managing editor of Decider.com. And it's Friday, and we're talking to Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. Hi, Alex.
Hi. That's a weird coincidence that it happens on the day, and we're doing that.
Right. It's crazy.
Weird.
Anything can happen. Alex, I have to tell you, I had never seen a second of the show The Masked Singer. And I came upon it the other day quite by accident. And I have to say, it's one of the dumbest things. I was like watching a nightmare play out on my TV.
But did you like it?
No, I hated it.
Okay.
How in the world is this a TV show? And why are people enjoying it? Because I don't get it.
Well, I think the first question answers the second question. That yeah. It's like watching a car crash fever dream every single time you tune in.
Yeah.
For those who haven't watched it, it's a bunch of celebrities dressed in a mask. They're kind of performing songs, but not for too long. I think they made them even shorter this season. They only sing for, I don't know, conservatively 5 to 10 seconds or so over the course of the show. And then a couple of judges make really terrible guesses as to who they are. And then one person is unmasked at the end, and it's usually somebody of the level of, like, Paul Schaefer or Ninja, the famous Twitch streamer, that sort of thing. It's absolutely bonkers. I think what makes it work, frankly, is the costumes more than anything, because they're completely outrageous and over the top. The rest of the show you can take or leave, but that's why I think people are sparking to it. And also the hope that there might eventually be some celebrity who is actually shocking.
That's not going to happen.
Who's the biggest name that has been revealed? Because I've never watched a second of this show.
They had the first one who was ever revealed was Antonio Brown, who was a big deal for some folks. I think Paul Schaefer is fine. T-Pain was the winner last season, which was genuinely surprising. But they always make guesses on the show like, oh, is that Beyonce under there? Is that maybe Tom Hiddleston? And you're like, no, it's not.
It never will be.
You know what it reminds me of, Alex, is
every once in a while, you'll accidentally come across a clip of some show that they show in Bulgaria or somewhere, and you just go, wow, that's what passes for entertainment in Bulgaria. I'm glad I live in the United States. And now that's what we're showing in the United States now.
Well, it started, I believe, as a South Korean show called King of the Masked Singer, and it was completely outrageous there. The thing that actually made that work was, I believe they only had the contestants come on for one show versus the Voice or American Idol style that they're doing here. So they actually had one episode where Ryan Reynolds was the surprise guest.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, so very impressive. Unfortunately, they haven't done that at all with the American version, but one can always hope.
So the stars there, they know it's a one-week commitment. They can show up and tape it and go home, but here you'd have to be on for a whole season maybe, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so they had people like, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name, David Cassidy, I guess. Was that it?
David Cassidy? Because he died.
Oh,
which would be better than being on The Masked Singer, in my opinion.
Oh, Bill, that is hateful.
I would rather die than be on The Masked Singer.
Oh, no. Regardless, they have people who travel back and forth from it. But, you know, it's a very C, D, E, maybe even lower list of celebrities who are doing the show.
Yeah. It can't last much beyond one more season, right? At some point, people are going to get wise to the fact that it's stupid, right?
People love it. Is it doing okay ratings-wise?
It is one of the few successful broadcast shows right now. That doesn't mean that it's an enormous hit where tens of millions of people are watching it. But by current broadcast standards, you have, I believe, somewhere between 7 and 10 million people watching it per week. It's already been greenlit for a third season that's premiering after the Super Bowl. So you're going to be living with it for a while longer.
It's on after the Super Bowl.
It is.
Well, good. No one will be late the next day because we won't watch it. Although I can't even say that because people are watching it.
I don't get it. I have no idea. All right, let's talk about better things. Paul Rudd, one of the most likable guys in all of show business, has his own show on Netflix. What is it?
Two Paul Rudds.
Well, two Paul Rudds.
It's two Paul Rudds. It's called Living With Yourself, and it's on Netflix today. It's 8 episodes, half-hour comedy, kind of drama. Excuse me. Just to spoil a little bit of the beginning, there's a whole cloning thing that goes on where you end up with two Paul Rudds in the first episode. They don't follow the sci-fi of it all too much, so if you're not into those sort of shows, the show also is very uninterested with that sort of thing. It's more about watching Paul Rudd play two characters, one that's a sad sack character, one that's a regular, very charming, very handsome Paul Rudd. And I personally did not love the show, but Paul Rudd is very engaging the entire time. And several of our reviewers disagreed and actually did love the show. So either way, at half hour, at 8 episodes, it's an easy watch. And if you want to spoiler, see Paul Rudd make out with himself, definitely check out the show.
I'm in. I was looking for it last night. I didn't realize it wasn't out yet. Yeah. So I will be watching it.
And people don't realize, even though we know him now as a movie actor, I think his first sitcom experience was on Friends, right?
Yeah, this is him returning to TV, and even though he is actually one of the hottest movie actors and one of the most expensive movie actors right now, this clearly is a passion project for him. It's not quite as serious, but it sort of feels like his Barry was for Bill Hader sort of thing, where he's trying out and flexing himself with some different things.
He's so good. Did I read this right? Did Stranger Things just announce that they were the most watched TV series on Netflix, the third season of Stranger Things, that broke the record for how many viewers it got? Did I see that right?
Yes, you did see that right. Millions and millions of people watched the third season of Stranger Things. This is obviously a huge deal for Netflix. They're already in production on the fourth season, so you don't have to worry about that. Though, obviously, there are some characters' fates who are left hanging in the balance. But according to Netflix, they say 64 million households watched Stranger Things in the first month. The reason I clarify that is Netflix is very cagey in terms of their viewing numbers.
Yeah.
So it's unclear exactly how many people actually watched it. The way that they characterize it is by households. So that means if there's, say, 4 accounts in a household, it could be 4 people watching that. It could be more than that. It also doesn't specify how many episodes they watched or anything like that. But regardless, 64 million is a big number, so it's a big, big show still.
Alex, they did similar things when the movie Bird Box came out on Netflix. They were very secretive. All they said was a lot of people watched it. It broke all kinds of records. Why are they holding back on information? What do they have to lose in telling us the numbers?
Well, the suspicion from a lot of TV critics are the numbers aren't quite as big as they're saying, or that perhaps, unlike most broadcast numbers, which are very transparent in terms of time watched and ages watched and everything, they're not sharing that stuff. So are they saying that somebody tunes in, like accidentally clicks on Stranger Things when that ad pops up on the top of the screen and then goes in and that's a view?
Yeah.
Is that not a view? It could mean something like that. It also could just mean this is how they have decided to categorize it. From a entertainment journalist perspective, the thing that's the most frustrating is they're not consistent with the way they characterize their numbers. So sometimes they'll say 64 million households. Sometimes they'll say number of people. Sometimes they'll say families, accounts. There's no standard there, and there's nobody checking on them. So it makes the whole thing, you squint your eyes a little bit whenever they put out those numbers.
Can I ask you one other quick question about Stranger Things? A friend of mine told me that there is a show on that's like Stranger Things. I know Halloween is coming up and people like to be scared. There's a show on called Dark, I think, that's like a German version of Stranger Things. Do you know the show at all?
I do. First of all, it is all in German, and the default setting on Netflix for the show, this is actually a big deal, is set to dubbing rather than the subtitles.
Yeah.
Immediately change your settings. I first watched the show. It's sort of a weird time travel, intergenerational family thing set in a small town. There's missing kids, all this stuff going on. I remember very distinctly watching the first episode with the dubbing and thinking, wow, this is terrible. And then I turned on the subtitles and immediately it became 1,000 times better.
Oh, all right.
People are absolutely obsessed with the show. One of our writers, Kayla Cobb, has written extensively about it on the site. And once you've watched it, go back and read through her guides because it's very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But she's done a very good job of encapsulating it. But yeah, definitely check that out.
And what's it called? Dark?
Dark.
And where
Dark.
Do we find it?
On
Netflix.
On your German Netflix.
Okay.
I always have Elfie Sommer come to my house and translate for me.
We have to take a break, but we were we talked to Yousef Salam earlier this week, and When They See Us is this a Netflix miniseries, 5 episodes about the Central Park Five. Jasmine told me about it. I've seen it. I love it. And I'm recommending it to everyone out there, too. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Are you familiar with that, Alexander?
I am. That's a phenomenal miniseries.
So
it's definitely, it's hard to watch at points, but it's so good and so necessary.
And it's weird because we talked to Yousef Salam, who is no longer in prison, and Felicity Huffman is in the movie and in prison while I watch this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Very much so. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then more with Alex Zelbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. We're at 312-981-7200 if you have any questions. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Alexander Zelbin is here. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. He knows his television, and there's a bunch to see on TV, including HBO's new TV version of Watchmen. What do you know about it, Alex?
Well, I know that it's fantastic. I've seen the first couple of episodes, and without getting into any spoilers, it is a sort of sequel to the comic book series. People may know it from the feature film, but it is picking up directly from the comic book series from the 1980s. There's some little differences there, but ultimately you don't have to worry about it too much. It is created by Damon Lindelof, who did Lost and The Leftovers, and it stars Regina King, Don Johnson, Jeremy Irons, and a bunch of other folks. The cast is fantastic. It's a very... I hesitate to use dark, even though it is dark superhero series, because there's some exciting superhero parts, there's some fun parts. And for those who are not into superhero series, it uses the tropes without explicitly being like people with superpowers. It's also very heavily about race in America, where the previous comic book was all about nuclear threat and nuclear anxiety. What Dan Lindelof has said is he thought the most existential threat facing mankind right now is racism, and that's what they delve into head-on from pretty much the first frame. So it's visually exciting. The acting is fantastic. It's beautifully filmed. Cannot recommend it highly enough. And that's 9 p.m. on HBO. It premieres.
I loved that movie. That was one of my favorite movies, The Watchmen, Zack Snyder's movie. Loved it.
Yeah. I will say, if you're a fan of that, the closest comparison, Jackie Earle Haley, who played Rorschach in the movie, They have some interesting twists on the Rorschach character in this, but again, I won't spoil. But Tim Blake Nelson plays a very similar character in this show, and Tim Blake Nelson is kind of the same guy as Jarking Earl Haley, so yeah. It's fun to see him on screen playing a version of that role.
Oh, good. Very good. So that's on HBO on Sunday night. The novel mm-hmm. Looking for Alaska has been adapted by Hulu. Tell us more.
Yeah, so this is John Green's novel from about 20 years ago. It's, I believe, his first novel. He also wrote Paper Towns and Fault in Our Stars, among other things. I really love this series. All of the episodes are on Hulu right now. It's about a kid who goes to a very weird boarding school that's sort of half summer camp, half boarding school, though it's based on John Green's real experiences. It's romantic. It's sad. It has a lot of stuff to say about the teen experience. And there's some great performances, particularly by Christine Froseth, who's a very young actress who's up and coming as Alaska, the main character of the title.
Will it tug at my heartstrings?
It definitely 100% will, yes.
Okay, good, because they need to be tugged. It's been a while. It's been too long. What about Modern Love over on Prime Video? What can you tell us about this, Alex?
Sure. This is a drama anthology dropped today. There are, I believe, 8 episodes of it, and it's based on the New York Times column of the same name. So each episode is very much its own thing, but they're all like little half-hour-long romantic comedies. Because it's an anthology, some are better than others. You may like some other more than others. The first episode stars Christine Milioti from The Mother, from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And it's a fun, weird little tale about her and her New York doorman. My absolute favorite one was Dev Patel and Catherine Kinnear are in these dual stories where she's interviewing him about his new dating app, but it turns out he has, of course, some dating challenges of his own. It's very romantic, very fun. A lot of the episodes are written and created by John Carney, who did Once, which mm-hmm. was a hit film a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, I recommend checking it out. Again, some you like, some don't work as much, but it's a quick watch.
Alex, I wanted to talk to you about something. I have finally joined the masses of people who watched and completed Fleabag. Absolutely loved that. When we spoke last time, you said, without giving anything away, it seems to be pretty much wrapped up at the end. I think it could go both ways. I think they could bring it back.
I know it's hard to. Yeah. But there's certainly like a very definitive note that Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the actress who wrote it and stars in it, gives you right at the end there.
Yes.
That
I had to look it up.
Yeah.
I did.
To me, it indicated that she's reached a place where she's settled and moved on emotionally from where she's been in the series. But
it may come
back. Exactly. If she had a good idea, I think she wouldn't turn away from doing it.
All right. I just need a little bit of hope dangled in front
That's
of me. That's all I want,
Alex.
I'm
not asking for a lot. Alex, less than a minute. We only have about 20 seconds, but real quick, a texter wants to know which streaming service, in your opinion, offers the best shows out of Netflix, Amazon, HBO, Showtime. Is there one that's far and above the other, or they're all pretty equal?
Oh, my goodness. This is a tough question. They all offer different things, but I tend towards Hulu just because they have a mix of some increasingly good original shows, but also you get all the broadcast stuff at the same time. So if you're missing things, you can check out most networks the same day. So in terms of the value, it's pretty good. Little asterisk there, Disney Plus is launching on November 12th,
yeah.
And their launch lineup is absolutely out of control. So if you're a fan of Disney stuff, that's the one that's going to be a must-have.
Excellent. Alex, fun to talk to you. Learned a lot, and we'll talk to you a week from today.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Alex Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. Break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's a big day for women everywhere, and I know you're a feminist.
Yes, I am, Wendy.
I know.
Yes, I am.
And can you explain to people that, you know, feminists just mean that people want to be treated, men and women, treated equally? It's not that you're a man-hater, because
right.
You're certainly not.
No. Some of my best friends are men. There's men in my family. We've had men in my family for decades. No, for a while, there was a common misbelief
yes.
that if somebody was a feminist, that meant that they thought that women were superior to men, when in fact it does not mean that at all. It means equal to men.
Yeah, as they should
be. And they are.
Well, NASA made history today. Two women astronauts embark on the first ever all-female spacewalk.
Excellent.
From the International, not House of Pancakes, but the International Space Station. Why don't they have an IHOP on ISS?
That is a great question.
U.S. astronauts Christina Cook and Jessica Meyer made history today. They exited the International Space Station at 0738 hours Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that our time? I'm not good at the conversion.
What is it?
7:38 a.m. Eastern time. So it was...
Oh, 7.5 hundred hours? It starts at doesn't it start at midnight?
No, I know it's 7:38 a.m., but that's Eastern time. What is it here?
Oh, it's an hour later here.
Okay, so 8:38, they went out this morning.
That's why I'm not an astronaut. I can't tell time and space.
An all-woman spacewalk was canceled in March. Do you remember why? Because this bothered me.
I don't remember the reason.
There
was
an ill-fitting spacesuit. They didn't have three that fit the women.
Is that why, really?
Yeah. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
Astronauts see sunrise about every 90 minutes when you're on the International Space Station.
That would take some getting used to, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you'd feel like, boy, today went really quickly.
Yes,
I've got nothing done.
Right.
Their job, this is, again, the first all-female spacewalk ever, in the history of ever.
Yeah.
The job is to fix a broken part of the station's solar power network.
Mm-hmm.
So they're handy?
Yes.
I love this. The pair, currently moving to the space station's P6 truss, at the far end. They began work. They'll be replacing a failed power controller. It's a five-hour thing. I don't know if they have wrapped it up, but I know there was a live stream where you can watch what's going on. Oh, I'm looking at it right now. It's pretty cool.
Very cool.
A five-hour thing. It was streamed live by NASA. Is a landmark moment for female astronauts and scientists.
It makes you wonder if in the early days of NASA, if they could have even guessed when something like this would take place. If they probably said, oh, three women? No, that's hundreds of years in the future. That'll never happen. And here it is happening. Good.
And then the first American female spacewalker who carried out her own mission 35 years ago, Kathy Sullivan. Her name's Kathy Sullivan.
Yes.
I said it weird. She was delighted by today's milestone. Koch and Meyer are replacing battery units after they failed to provide increased power to the International Space Station. The failure has not significantly impacted the crew or its mission, but it definitely needed to be repaired nonetheless.
Yep.
And Cook, who is set to complete the longest single space flight by a woman, will remain in orbit until February 2020.
Mm.
And then she will have been the longest woman in space.
Not the longest woman in space, just serve the most time, duration-wise.
The longest single space flight.
Oh, okay. All right.
What do you mean?
You said the longest woman in space, like she was elongated somehow
through
her space travels.
No, but then remember when you come back to Earth, your body changes.
Are you shorter when
I think
you
shrink.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't remember. I can't believe it's taken this long for...
It's hard to imagine. Why did it take so long?
I don't know.
And we've not had a woman on the moon yet. That needs to change.
Who was the last person to go to the moon?
I don't know.
Do we still have a NASA program?
They always said Alice Cramden would go to the moon, but that never happened. But Ralph used to threaten her, and that was wrong. I don't know who the last person on the moon was, but it has not been a woman yet.
No.
And they would not be afraid to ask directions. Guys are always afraid to ask directions.
May I tell you the difference?
Please
the woman
do.
Wouldn't need directions.
Right. They just know somehow. It's magical.
Why is it? I'm not kidding. Some of the biggest stupid fights Jim and I get into is
right.
because I use Google Maps and he uses Apple Maps.
Yeah.
And if I'm driving, he'll go, no, take this way. I said, no, my Google Maps is showing. Yeah, but I use this. But you're not driving.
Right.
That is the one thing.
Whoever's driving gets to decide the ways by which you'll travel. Yeah.
And to control which music you listen to.
The driver gets to decide the music and the routing.
Yes, don't you think? Don't you agree?
Yes. I'm trying to think if it's ever come into play. Yeah. I think who's ever driving makes those decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But why is it that...
And if the windows are up and down, up or down. Because I don't know if other cars do this. I drive a Jeep, and if you just have one window down somewhere in the car, it makes a weird,
just the back
vibrate-y.
Windows.
Yeah, it is the back windows, isn't it?
Yes.
So it makes your car vibrate while you're driving.
It sounds like you are in an airplane ready to take off.
Yeah.
And it's just the back windows, and you'd think...
Why can't they fix that?
I don't know, and I am so frustrated, and I'm so glad it's not just my cars, because...
Mm-hmm. Is it like that in all your cars?
Yes, and Dylan, my youngest, sits in the back, and he like I, get car sick, so yeah. He always has to have the window down,
yeah.
And then we always have to open one in front to kind of make that noise go away, because it's like...
Right.
It's this big thudder.
Right.
And it frustrates the heck out of me, but... I'm sorry, they have streamlined and changed the exterior of cars.
Yeah.
It's worse, because in old cars, that never happens.
No, I know. I know.
It is aerodynamic, my ass. Why does it do that?
Right. Send that to GM and see what happens. Tell them that. I don't know. It's very confusing, and it does, like, the rest of my family isn't that bothered by it, but when you're
at all,
you
it is so,
the whole time you're driving, you can't drive with that.
It like hurts your ears. It's yeah. So loud.
Yes. Yes.
They have streamlined too much.
Right. All right. So we've decided whoever's driving gets to decide the songs that'll be played.
And the route.
And the route, and whether or not any windows in the back are open so you don't get the vibrating noise.
Right.
All right, that seems fair.
But why is it, as we were talking about the first woman spacewalk today that yeah. made history,
yeah.
why is it that you guys won't ask for directions? You will drive
too proud.
Hours out of your way yeah, before you'll stop and ask directions.
Too proud. Just too proud. Right. And it's wrong. Needs to change. We'll fix it. We'll fix
get behind
it.
That movement, will you?
Yeah,
start
I'm behind
a Facebook
that.
Page.
Yes. We'll take a break, and then there's more show.
This is Major Tom to ground control.
The first woman spacewalk took place hours ago this morning. I believe they are wrapping up. They are fixing.
Now they're all watching The Bachelor, Wendy.
Whatever. On this special day.
Yep.
Michael has one of his back windows down because it's making that helicopter noise.
I'm sorry,
no,
Wendy.
No, you're fine.
Go ahead.
We were trying to remember the last person to walk on the moon because Bill pointed out a woman has not been on the moon yet.
Not yet.
Michael, who was
That's
it?
Correct. Well, you should know the answer, Wendy, because you spent time at Triton College.
The CERN Space
Eugene
Center.
Was he yes. the last person on the moon?
Yes, he's the last man to step off the face of the moon. Eugene Cernan. Yeah.
That's quite a gap. I'm surprised it's been that long since anyone's been there.
The mid-70s, Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
my wife
Bertrand
say,
Travel.
This is why I wear the extra large helmet, because I have all this useless information in my head.
Well, we are so glad you do, Michael. Usually Bill's enough, but today
no,
we needed
today
you
we
as
need
well.
An extra. Thank
Have a good
you.
Weekend.
Thank,
thank
you so much.
Thanks.
We got to see if Bertrand Travel can put something together for the spring. Get some people out there. You don't want to go to the moon?
Be honest. If you had all the money in the world
yeah.
and a SpaceX and all these places where you could travel to the moon, would you?
I think I'm afraid.
That's it. You can end
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I think I'm afraid.
Me too.
Let me stop right there. I don't know. I think that's the thing that's keeping me back. That and I'm not weird. I'm weird about the lack of gravity.
I would like that.
You'd be okay with that?
Finally, I'd match the weight on my driver's license. I just would be a scaredy cat. And I love space. I love astronomy. I love all that stuff.
Right.
But to observe from afar or from
right.
a telescope,
no,
not to participate in it.
Yep. Yep.
You
know how, though, if you're in a car and your car is making a noise or shaking a little bit, you go, I'll just pull over and have somebody look at it. That's very hard to do in space. Right?
And I get car sick, so I couldn't have the window down at all.
No, not in a rocket. You can't get rocket sick. There's no window to crack open.
Rocket sick. All right. Well, that's all I know. And congratulations, because girls rule.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to
yep.
say.
Yep.
Another girl that's in the news, Felicity Huffman, reported to federal prison earlier this week.
Yes.
And I was curious. She is 56 years old. She reported to the Federal Correctional Institute in Dublin, California. It's near the San Francisco Bay Area. Prison is low security prison. It houses 1,227 female inmates.
How many of them former sitcom stars does it say?
None at the moment.
Just her.
She is set to serve 14 days in prison for paying $15,000 to Rick Singer, that mastermind behind these college admission schemes.
Yeah.
Other past inmates at this particular correctional center, Dublin, California.
These are famous inmates?
Uh-huh. Patty Hearst.
Oh, right.
Author and actress Patty Hearst.
Yeah.
Heidi Fleiss, the Hollywood madam, served quite a few months there.
Yeah.
And Sarah Jane Moore, who tried to assassinate Gerald Ford.
Oh, that's quite a celebrity roster of inmates they've had.
Yes. And Huffman is... they showed pictures of the actual cells, and there
what does
is
it look like?
A twin bed and then a bunk bed and then a desk.
Yeah.
It looks very cramped.
Yeah.
I don't know this for a fact, and I'll try and find out this information, but... Wouldn't you think she would be in a solo? I can't imagine she'd be put in with the rest of the general population because wouldn't they be mean to her because she's a celebrity?
I don't know. Would they be mean
to her? And only doing 14 days?
Oh, interesting. There's something to that. So is this one of what, every once in a while when somebody of some renown goes to jail, you hear it referred to as a country club prison. Is this considered to be a country club prison or is it not?
It's in the Bay Area. I was also looking at some of the things you can choose to do, an arts and crafts class. You can go do yoga.
Oh.
It's pretty great weather.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be some pretty great weather,
right.
But it's still, you're locked up.
You can go outside?
I think so, and you can...
They show them playing basketball. On TV shows, if you're in jail, you get to play basketball. They show a lot of that. Will she get to play basketball?
I don't know if that's something you have to earn.
Oh.
And
but she's only there 14 days, so there's
so
no...
So she can live without basketball?
Can she, though?
I don't know.
Once it's in your blood, Wendy.
But we think of this as a country club prison. I hope to go through the rest of my life without ever going to prison.
No. I would lose that bet.
Do you remember Martha Stewart?
Yes, of course.
She has opened up. She opened up to Katie Couric a couple years ago, and I just want to say that no one should have to go through that kind of indignity except for murderers and a few other categories, according to Martha Stewart. She said it was absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
She spent time, she said no one should have to go through that. It's a very, very awful thing. She was asked if she found prison to be a growth experience, and Martha Stewart said nothing good emerged from the 5 months that she spent in 2004 at a minimum security federal prison in West Virginia. That you can make lemons out of lemonade, what hurts you makes you stronger. No, none of those adages fit at all. It's a horrible experience. Nothing is good about it. Nothing.
I believe that.
I do, too. You can't come and go as you please, which is the freedom we all want
for
in
sure.
life.
But there's got. I'm sure they get some sort of special treatment. I would still be very nervous around bedtime. I would be very nervous sleeping. But that's. I mean,
why would you be nervous sleeping?
Because I would.
You're
sleep
not that
with,
pretty.
I would sleep. You don't know that, Wendy. Come on. You sleep with one eye open. You have to, because you're in jail. I wouldn't trust anybody.
But don't they lock the doors at night? So you're locked in your cell.
Yeah, but again, if you're in with two other cellmates, you don't know them.
If you could pick your cellmates, who would they be and why?
Oh, that would be interesting. So would I have to pick from people who have committed crimes?
I guess.
Or just anybody?
You can take your pick.
Anybody?
There.
Oh, that's tough. I would have to, it would be probably two separate lists if it was only people who committed crimes.
Well, one would be Carrot Top because his crime is he's not funny.
Wow.
And Kevin Hart.
No, I don't want that. Although,
oh, my God,
the two
of you.
He could slip between the bars and get the keys and let us out of our cell. So it would be Kevin Hart. I would pick him. He would just move sideways through the bars. Kevin, get the keys. Get us out of here.
I can't find out what is offered. I saw this article before where I said that they could... You can get like a total of $35 that someone can leave for you. So her husband might leave that. That can go for the...
Oh, you can buy...
For just the vending machines.
Oh.
That's like, I think, a weekly limit.
So you and get then, some Funyuns when you're in
if
there?
If it's in the vending machine. And then you can get a little more money after you've been there a while that will be put towards your commissary account.
Are cigarettes still...
I don't think you can smoke in prison.
Oh, you can't? Oh. I don't smoke, but I've been told if you ever go to jail, bring a lot of cigarettes because you can trade for cigarettes. Because I'd get like a beach towel.
What would you do with a beach towel?
I don't know. Just like to have a beach towel. I can't be more specific. I just like to have one.
All right. We are going to take a break. You can join us on the stream when we talk about more fun things. And I'm going to try and find out what the perks are in this prison.
All right.
The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's what it is. And we'll find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch next, 720 WGN.